ingenuity and purpose to repair our Earth. The enormous funding that flowed into our
I'm hearing. I'm hearing something through it, like a recording of something.
Yeah, because we're live now.
Good.
Hi, we are Sam and Michaela from Castleton, and you are listening to WGXC on 90.7 FM. Keep on smiling.
Yeah, that's fine. So you should be able to...
Tickets are now available at wavefarm.org/drive-in for an unforgettable drive-in event with Negative Land and Sue C, Matt Most, and Ronnie Allen Greenblatt opening. Turn out for Negative Land's legendary sound collage and real-time cinema with Sue C, along with Matt Most's renowned electronic music and sampling culture. This and so much more at the Greenville Drive-In, Friday, May 31st. All to support Wave Farm and WGXE. Tickets are going fast. Get yours now. Drive-In is all one word at wavefarm.org/drive-in. WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993, Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farm's WGXE is made possible in part by the generous support of Kaya Weedman in Germantown, New York. WGXE monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the May 2024 edition of Poet Radio. My name is Chris Funkhauser, and I'm pleased to say that tonight's Poet Radio is happening live for the first time since April 2019 due to the station's recent move to Catskill, as well as my own semi-recent relocation. The opportunity to do live off-hours programming has increased, and here we are. As we get going, I want to extend my gratitude to WGXE's programming manager and volunteer coordinator, Meredith Coy, who's been teaching me how this studio works. I'm in WGXE's Catskill studio this evening with Charles Stein, here from Barrytown, who I was first introduced to by Don Bird on the night I arrived for graduate school in Albany in 1992. As mentioned on the blurb for tonight's show, Dr. Stein is a poet, scholar, and translator renowned for his innovative and deeply intellectual approach to poetry, a description to which we could add much more. Besides his many books of poetry and prose, he's a prolific visual artist, a draftsman whose volume of 12 drawings was published by Station Hill in 2017, and is a delightful performer whose practice includes wildly inventive sound poetry. Chuck was a guest on the show once before on St. Patrick's Day 2016, and that same year he and I embarked on a recording project that would become the basis of his Penn Sound Archive, which at present includes about 25 hours of recordings. I'm going to leave our introduction at that for now, and those interested in learning more about Stein and his work may wish to take a look at his website, charlessteinpoet.com. Okay, the premise of tonight's program is essentially to offer up a straight-up reading by Chuck, which is something I believe the world can benefit from. So once we get going, I do not expect to do too much in the way of interrupting him or the work from being transmitted. Perhaps over the course of the reading, he'll pause and talk about what he is working on or has been working on lately. We'll see how it goes. So without further ado, let's listen to Charles Stein on Poet Radio.
"Take the damn thing out of your mouth," said Miles to Coltrane. When the latter complained, "The music just won't stop. It's coming on." "The sound of music is the last thing on your mind. The road or lead it courses along has been there all along. The sound extending itself as if the very signal were the time the tune were thrown down along. Can, of course, be broken off abruptly. Just lift your finger from the piano key, stop blowing across the transverse whistle hole, and the music stops with unmediated alacrity. When your parent dies, the chair you never knew you were sitting on is pulled right out from under you. What remains is all of you that there ever was." Civil War. If there is going to be a civil war, it's a matter of inventing what compassion is for. When you find yourself astonished to be sitting smack inside of one of the combatant camps, it's your war too. No conviction strong enough to put you on the outside of it. Coconut monk in no man's land, accommodating escapees from both worlds, having had enough of being right, and the struggle to preserve not values, not yours, not theirs, but existence itself. That's your side of the inequality. The other, you cannot even say in a form the enemy would recognize. The rift is that inevitable. The time's that bad. You cannot see the forest for the trees at night when the rain dreams. Paleo people, at one with your dream. Why call it dream? You were oh so wakeful as the pale moon rain catharized your blood mind, all your fluids fluent with luminous gnawings. Did you peer into the opalescent moonstones incised in the caverns of your skulls to descry in horror or invent with bitter willfulness the epics yet to come, our epics, when the outrage of exaggerated numeracy would overwhelm the moonlight and drive the living corpuscles and their gnawings first into the margins, then into plasmas so occluded that all manifest glory and its cosmic display should become the night epics when only the night were real, only the night were refuge, and the mind itself devolved to dream indeed. All philosophy, ghost dance. Or thought, even. Jacques Derrida, the ghost dance of language itself, watching the sunset sail off into the sunset, the vast imperium of meaning, being's transfinite ocean of metonyms, where meanings go to achieve their last initiation, their spanking welcome home through the minuscule portals of their advent, as if the creaky door twixt timelessness and oblivion swung both ways. Do you know where you are, little mouse? Certainly, alive in the master's vestibule. And you, who inquire so peremptorily, do you know anything at all? Wild horses, without governance other than themselves. Pull no wagon, preen for no equestrian, owe no loyalty to lawman, cowgirl, cowboy, cavalry, brave, or god. Wild, wild horses would have no interest in pulling you away from the lust-bedriven energies they themselves, more properly, romping in the blood, are image of. Leave them be to run with the blue cabalas of releasement. Not only achieved practitioner, but all of being, in such release, relieved. Usufruct, look it up. If I can stand up to the vanishing, ineluctable thrust of existence with a grand aplomb, the usufruct of existence itself shall not depose me. Ha! That I am not that I am should sufficiently arm or disarm the excogitations of the marvelous. Rather, step back and explicate. That which precedes all deposition cannot itself be deposed. Divest command and set a course within yourself. You have been here always, where no time deposes the frontality of your welcome. We were sitting in a circle and passing the smudge stick around so each might expound in an orderly manner, and as each talked, our listening itself became an intimate source, reflected into being and vanishing without ceremony when the talking that comprised one, albeit the talking of the other, but you get it, there is no other talking under smudge stick umbrella, only talking. If you call her goddess, she is one. If you think it substance, it is the mercury of the philosophers, a silverine, aqueous emptiness filling the fields of vision and bodily sense, accessed from every place, situated at none. Green scarves flutter in a mind's wind. I might decide to hide behind a studied, trite normality, use the reader's presumption that there is a like it is, and say things plain or gritty, one factoid per morpheme, a paperclip holding my glasses together, a bottle in my pocket counting pills, late at night, at laptop, making poems. Now the noises on the avenues have stopped. The house itself is silent. No animals, no paramours. All projects quietly tucking themselves away. Only the ancient railway, climbing World Hill up or climbing down, and the inevitable fact of one's sojourn on it. But who'd believe me? Of course not. An epic poem. Normally epics have 24 books, but this book just has 6. Book 1. Winter, reed stalks from yesteryear. They say things. But does when they say them pass away as swiftly as sunlight, cloud, cast, shadow, cools, attention? A happy animal, its belly smoothed by human hands. Then, not so happy, an animal, swatting, hand withdrawn to soothe itself. Later, full moon in November. Book 2. Words can't catch up to the swift careening of the vocables that model speech. It sounds like someone talking expressively in the next compartment, or some language you've never heard till now. Not even now can capture the sense of it. Later, perhaps. Cicipifeso, opesivici cotumuli vitudun. Iti tuski filicutura menen, meni pentidicetem seticatura, elicetintin cediminusa, tumenivesa, pelicadanta, cediminon. Recognition retards contact. Here I am, and will I go to sleep or not? Subjective inquiry. If the fact precedes its execution, off with its head. Not necessary. Everything vanishes in its own good time. The head turned into a stone. That'll keep it, for a while at least. Later, when space boils over, or freezes so egregiously, even the stone and its vast internal cathedral emptiness contracts, and the coolth sucks the matter into itself. There comes a time when even matter walks away from speculative attention and the construction crews of abstract lodging devices. Go home for lunch. Book 4. Every planet, exoplanet, has its own soteriology. Saved on planet Alpha 12700.4 C Glockenspiel, is ignored on planet Adraco Interfecit Seipsen. If the timeless now is as real as it gets, y'all can afford to ignore such soteriological pluralism and sit in your own lodge till the weather changes amicably and the bear at the window's curiosity can be satisfied harmlessly, to the bear, that is. If the timeless now is as real as it gets, he finds out what he needs to know and lumbers off to the rest of the company. Boredom, 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 gunfire, death. Book 5. Certain subjects remain taboo. You cannot write about them without their tinting your discourse, and more than that, the effluviality of your nature that you extend beyond your being into the miasma of another sentient entity's surveillance scape. Book 6. You want to know what's going on, quite naturally. Now you are exercising your own surveillance scape. And the bear returns to take another look. You rattle pans, and off he goes, not satisfied. The moon returns unexpectedly on the wrong night. You saw its slim crescent yesterday, so how come tonight it's full? No one to answer that inquiry. The noise of rattling metal chases inquiry away. Eternal truth itself? You can't get there from here, says the bear. I know this very well. I've tried you all. Let's see. This is another kind of epic poem. Imago Mundi, Mango Chutney. If you do score, tell me. If you're absent, don't. Later we can settle up. The next event prepares us for what must have happened, what must have already been. Eliminate payment and return to sender. Cruel neutrality, or happy so. Causality never blushes. Indeterminacy never winces. Never nurse another's never. You cannot abandon your own full spoon. Turn off your universal cloaking device, for Christ's sake. Do you think the aliens are Jewish? That's not funny. Okay, what then? Neutrality is its own reward. Later than does not exist before its own recall. Walking it off before the fuzz arrive, oh shucks, my actual agenda will have to postpone its moon landing. My own dark side. Next page. Not yet exposed to be a page. What then? Behind the curtain. And does it exist? Can two tunes actually... Oh, man. I screwed this up royally. I'm sorry. We have to start this one again.
All right.
I'm...
No worries, live radio.
Yeah, live radio. So, okay, live radio, here goes. See if you remember this. Imago Mundi, Mango Chutney. If you do score, tell me. If you're absent, don't. Later we can settle up. The next event prepares us for what must have already been. Eliminate payment and return to sender. cruel neutrality, or happy so. Causality never blushes. Indeterminacy never winces. Never nurse another's never. You cannot abandon your own full spoon. Never trace your own device, or second guess a grand illusion. Real grapes, black foxes. At the end of every broom, one apostle. Even if you think they don't exist, still you follow after. You have filled a small notebook with tricky, if nevertheless, cannily stone-closed analogons that only work if you do, if I do, if you try me on for a proper fitting. If you yourself can see that you exist, then, okay, I say, consequently, I do see so too. I am close to my own term. The mountain between us holds a lean on impassibility. Grammatical suavity irritates the bloom. The headless ones scratch without an object. I'll not take me off my own bucket list. Normal to a fishing expedition. Panther poised to pounce. Glottal stop and glottal onward. Not yet, but from now on. Exactitude cannot be known, but does it exist? Can two tunes actually listen together? You have to be inside the sound to hear no tune at all. Vibrating background and back of that. Oh, neonates, rue not your own umbilicus. Never bet on your own regret. Tribes of having hair removed from the dead. Who will pick up the thread, but when it was no thread at all, but the whole cloth wavering? Self-initiating wind stochastics. The queen's two bodies. The self is dead. Long live the self. Long live the dead. The boat you built against time so long ago, can you sail it now? Some beds are better to lie in, some to. I'd easily oblige you, but I'd have to grow another foot. Must we vanish with our polish? Correct me if I'm wrong, but what if I'm not invisible? Let not time deceive you. You shall not conquer time, writes Auden, but time deceives you. Everywhere I see, everywhere you go, doctor and lawyer in one fleet. I'm so tired of waking. Hand me an umbrella, won't you? Quiet meat was all I could do to compare you to. It's all connected. If you challenge that, eerie how your pocket squeaks. You can count on my attention to your every last quarter of sense data, water, off-site, at the source. Four-headed Scrooge newts. Don't climb up your own tree with anyone, not even me. Imago mundi, mango chutney. Well, I need to take a couple of seconds break to drink some water.
Yeah, sure.
And, well, I haven't been commenting on all of this. This was just to see where where they go as a... They actually were going quicker than I thought.
Sounds really good.
I wanted to read... I was going to start with this, but then I somehow changed my mind. I mean, it's sort of a... Almost an introduction poem to read the very opening of Hesiod's Theogony from my translation. Hesiod is really the first poet in the something like classical Western literary tradition. He's a contemporary with Homer, but he begins his main poem, the Theogony, the Birth of the Gods, with an account of the Muses. I wanted to read you that little introduction. So this is Hesiod. He talks about the Heliconian Muses, and Helicon is a mountain, and the Muses are the Muses associated with Helicon and Mount Olympus. They're connected mountains. With the Heliconian Muses, let us begin our music. They hold Mount Helicon great and holy, and dance on gentle feet about its spring of violet water, and about the altar of Cronos' mighty son. And they bathe their tender bodies in the Permesis, and in the spring of the horse, and holy Olmeos, and dance their beautiful dances most delightful, with leaping feet at the summit of Mount Helicon. From there they arise, and veiled in many vapors, make their way by night, emitting most beautiful music, hymns to Zeus, Aegis Holder, and Lady Hera of Argos, who walks on sandals of gold, and the daughters of Zeus, Aegis Holder, grey-green-eyed Athena. Once they taught Hesiod beautiful song as he tended his lambs under holy Mount Helicon. And this is what the goddess first said to me, those Olympian Muses, daughters of Zeus, Aegis Holder. Wild shepherds, foul occasions for shame, monstrous bellies, we know how to tell many lies and make them sound likely, and we know, when we wish it, how to sing things that are true. So said the sleek-tongued daughters of great Zeus, and they gave me a scepter of laurel they plucked as it blossomed, and blew a singer's voice into my own, that I might sing things past and of the future. And they bade me praise the gods who are forever, and always to sing of themselves at the start and the close.
Do you want to talk about that book a little bit, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That is a translation of mine from my fairly recent book, The Light of Hermes Trismegistus, which includes seven translations of texts, which I claim are essential texts connected to Hermeticism and to the figure of Hermes Trismegistus. There are translations that I've been concerned with really over the whole of my life, and they're presented with fairly simple introductions to what they actually are, and then commentaries that I write, trying to bring them into what I consider to be the possible future of the Hermetic tradition. The book is really spelling out why I think that makes kind of sense in our present situation. We'll see how time goes, and I may read some other fragments of the translation from here, but actually there's a couple of other of these my poems I maybe read first here. Madame Sesostris, famous clairvoyant. Everybody knows that from The Wasteland, hopefully, maybe. Then you put it into a practical vessel and place that over your head. How long standing that way? Whatever. The perfectly articulated, happy pastel dawnlight come true at last, each exaggerated anticipation, expectation, resolved, and everyone gets just what they want for themselves and for their others. The invisible, just behind the hanging blanket that still includes the proprietress of prophetic trance in seance. the lady vanishes. Later, you go back there and find what exactly? Crystal ball, of course, a black mirror, a pack of cards, and then what? A final snapshot, a grand museum. Die anyway. They seem to end with either very dark or very optimistic turns. I'm just noticing this as I'm reading these. You were on a little jaunt to your sleepy nearby country mountain hideaway with your guard down in the rain. And it found you, attempting to rouse yourself through its actual rousing of you. Ice skates on a plane of fire, potable ideas to drink you down until all that comes to appearance as you assemble yourself seems tinctured with their affordances, and it's dawn of every day at once, so you can do anything. Poppies pop up all over the place, hence the name, in June or July, whenever they do. My mother came out of the house and said, "Look, the poppies," as if she'd never planted them, and they just popped out of the blue. So mother's magic was in what wasn't telling you the how of it, as at about that same age, we all wanted to skip steps. Who hath not the joy of the work, legs it in sadness to the post office, and returns from the post office in sadness. Who hath not the joy of the work, thinks his sky a hat that pinches. Who hath not the joy of the work, does not know his belly's a cauldron of barley brews, his house a book, his book a dome, his dome a sky, his animals the eyes of the gods. Who hath not the joy of the work, consumes his own argument, plays another's instrument. Happy the one who has found the joy of the work. Let me see, how are we timing? We got plenty of time. Okay, but these are somewhat longer ones that follow each other. This first one has 10 parts, and the second one has 11 parts. So just so you know where you are in this extended event. One, there must be a cow in the house. Anyway, go inside and look. Take your glasses, your milk glasses, arranged in the black rack. Two. And what do you see now? The irreality of everything, not the mind. And the mind, its irreality? Three. Persons from another neighborhood beyond the aqueduct and past the high power lines, where the rules of human behavior are off somewhat. Some of the people are like moths, and some like brown cats, and others always want to get you to do something. They want me to do something. And I hesitate, unable to refuse outright. There's no such move in the game. So I walk alongside that tall one, listening to the strange events he wishes me to know him mover of. Four. What comes after house? Stuck. Unable to muster the force to blow away the zookeeper, to get the attention of the elephant himself. Five. I am sitting at this microphone trying to rouse the concern of the elephant itself, seated beneath an oak tree, mauling the shrubs. Six. If thoughts have waves, elephant thought waves rock the forest and topple cities that house the sad zoos. 7. There are probably membranes separating the worlds, and the thoughts of one world are not able to pass the membrane. Or maybe they can pass. 8. Brain and membrane, and across it passes a thought whose perfection is not permanent. How long can it remain? How long can it remain a thought? And now it is one of those waves with equivocal properties. 9. People don't like the look of things. Logic offends. We would prefer that there were no such logic. It would be better if the wind just stopped and the children could go along the paths without being broken by larger things proposing themselves. It would be good if the house and its architect just refrained from discussing things. It would be better, best, if night came on and the quiet children sank into their slumbers without discriminating the shadows on the wall, the unborn room in the light. 10. I am an archetype talking. I eat people. And the second one is called Hecate. And the material that it deals with here is actually the material from the Chaldean Oracles, which is another one of these Hermetic texts that I translated in my Hermes book. Hecate becomes a cosmic figure, a figure of cosmological mythology. 1. If I were a cow and very pure of thought, but very thick of sentience, my milk would flow into rivulets of intellect and sensuous modalities of apparency, green and pastoral. 2. Don't diss the natural, Mr. Uneasy, you who show no forbearance for those who will not abide the misadventures of the technological, you who don't like cows. This lowing cow will not get up and step even on you, yet. Tonight, perhaps, when the streams dry up, and the lowing becomes agitated curie, and the lowing becomes an agitated curie of mordant howling, and you have nothing to think, you who are so accurate in your reprisals against the sentimentality you think is nature, red in tooth and claw, you think, nasty brutish in thought, you think, every man against his brother, God against all, you think. 3. Is this that poem about the cows, again and again, I claim never have written? Certainly. As good an emblem as another, the cow before the world, whose mind is milk. 4. Whose milk is mud, if it isn't a cow, if rather a squid, at the bottom of the sea, so dark down there that only bioluminescence flickers lust and hunger to other squids lounging in the dark. 5. No matter what the metonym, you will not cast your thought easily about the origin, if it is an origin. 6. Your future is the squid's exegesis, possibly. The writing on the brick wall is just more bricks. If your thought is written on bricks, it will last till the next cosmic holocaust. That should be sufficient longevity for your intellectual identity to quiet itself regarding the inevitable loss of its colossal energy expended on proposing. 7. And then scratching up gutsy arguments to bolster volubly cow-like daliness pastoral or squid-like dungeons at the bottom of darkness, Mr. Uneasy. It is impossible to understand, for instance, this, that however far back in logic you push away the wound-up potentialities at the beginning that must have been there for the visible jungle tangle of glorious moribund life to have unwound itself contingently without intent on the part of primordial cow or squalid squid. 8. If it isn't an animal outside of time, a bull or tiger or weird sort of time-lapse vegetable with a mind impossible to investigate without altering the silence at which time happens, not the sound in the head, but the sound inside the silence, inside the sound, inside the head. You have to take it seriously that we were not somewhere, even if when the technicalities fall away, the moon resumes its emptiness or fullness, or the clouds, without repetition, progress across the lower atmospheric strata that their very passing orchestrates. 9. If not an animal, an algorithm, you think, a list of steps taken on the great machine. People think they have invented this or that, the spinning jenny or internal combustion engine, were not primordial features of any protocosmos in eternity. There is no spinning jenny. If you wish to smash machines, consider this. 100 years after the first choo-choo shuffled coal and blackened the lungs of 10,000 European sensitives, the machinic universe came to a crisis. Black body radiation, unresolved, ultraviolet catastrophe. The scientists, without irony, provided a kind of poetry then. But no one yet knew how to figure the finer energies beyond the visible, something askew in the realm of the machinic. 10. And in another history, you might think of the wind-up toy that caused existence to elaborate itself so prolifically. Hecate's Eonx, or magic top, as figure for the planetary cosmos. A spinning thing, indeed, that emits a sound, and in the sound, a voice is discriminable. What does it say? An echo of mind's intent can be gleaned in the adventitious sonorities, until the goddess, whose name and narrative came from an epic earlier than she. But there she was, with her planetary hound dogs casting an image of herself onto the minds of ambivalent dedicatees. So she had to provide entheogens of rare effect to get the little people to eradicate their noonday and find her beyond the figured cosmos, producing the myriad worlds with her womb intact. 11. Something like an envoi. Go, little beasts, with your numinous entrails. I attend with greatest interest to the things you would have me say.
Yeah. Jack, let me step in one second.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I want to let the listeners know they are in tune to WGXC, ACRA, Catskill Hudson. This is 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. This is a poet radio program for May 2024, and you have been listening to and are going to continue listening to, if you stay tuned to the radio for open ears, another 15 minutes or so with Charles Stein.
Okay, these are two poems that are, well, alchemically connected. Connected to alchemy. And the first one is called Oxyma Pneuma. Pneuma means spirit, and oxyma is a vessel, something that holds something. It is necessary to habituate the proper ointment and anoint the vessels that are your eyes, that they, now changed thereby, might ogle the invisible, such entities as seek for sight in your eyes. What do you think they're up to, approaching from a fully articulated no place, whose ground of being is the night itself, folded into that unguent, unquenchable, matter-like apparencies, the glow invisible but felt by the eye itself, the duplicity of the seeing and the seen, ejaculating such beings that, as luminous, essentially articulate a darkness you can touch with a sorcerer's broom to dust away the spilt powders of non-entity. Charge me, if you must, with idolatrous euphony. I will furnish my deposition with eyes wildly primed to see as I will. Now you see it, now you are it, and the perfectly ostensible is the almanac of the god. Distillation. You used words to karate style, crack tiles, break ground, open speleological fissures in the rock face of soul. Now the cleared ground is covered with architecture and boulevards, sidewalks converging on the sun, professional sigilization to strain horizon. Anyway, they encircle this local parcel of real estate from fringe-dweller regions or other parcels altogether. What if they are not just parcels, but the back of a giant animal, a pig perhaps? What then? Your present reifications of the broken land can't handle that, so you displace your worldly gazes. You just stop doing that. Stop shoving your trowel into other people's garden plots, your prosthetic extensions of greedy circumspection. See that monster, paying no mind to the trees he knocks over as he marches across targeted parcels of other people's garden plots? Before horizons and their opticalization of pregnant yearning, you are not innocent. Not indictable, but still not pure. Still, at this juncture, familiarity felt its warrant from the sky. I mean, you were the sky, yes? Hermes murdered a turtle to turn its shell into the armature for a lyre. What do you murder? Cats? Bagpipe, buzz noise, hidden vocalized susurrus, backup for existence itself. And no more backup, just the voluble silence of the not particularly grand murmuring of mountains. There always is a residue, a tar that sticks to the glass. Scrape it off and feed it again to the teeth of the mystic stone. At the last iteration of the function, the tar has been reduced beyond the finest resin, nothing in excess of the last step. Head at last in the sky, sky in the sky in the stone. Words to do this. Let's see. How much time? We have any time?
Yeah. 12 minutes or so.
Okay. What I think I'll do is I'm going to read some of a translation from the Chaldean oracles. The Chaldean oracles were a collection of poems that were supposedly written by a father and son team, one of whom was experiencing visions, and the other put the visions into a kind of hexameter, a kind of verse, which got picked up by the Neoplatonists as a kind of religious text, so that they were actually writing commentaries. All the major later Neoplatonists wrote commentaries on these oracles. My point about them is that they actually are interesting poems when taken literally and not simply put into the philosophical context. So I'm just going to I'm just going to be reading in them, and then you tell me when to stop.
All together,
clad in clamorous light, arming mind and soul with trident force. Throw the entire synthema of the triad into your being, nor frequent the watercourse of the celestial fireflux in a distracted manner. Rather, concentrate. There exists a certain mind thing. To it one must put mind's flower. And if you incline mind to it, as if attending something, you are not minding that. It is the very possibility of mightiness flashing circumambient light in mental sectors. And do not attend it with vehemence, but by means of the long extended flame of mind that measures all things, but not that one mind thing. And do not hold mind to it with an obstinate intensity, but facing the eye of your soul the other way, turn an empty mind toward that one mind thing in order to study that mind thing, because it already exists outside the mind. It is not possible to adduce a name for it, as if a name could be adopted to it. This, therefore, what is beyond all things, is only referred to as the One by those desiring to utter the ineffable. The mind of the Father has sown symbols down in the world, the mind, that is, that thinks the intelligibles. They are said to be things of ineffable beauty. For all things that issue from the One and to the One return are divided intellectually into many bodies. Do not retain in your mind the multiplicitous otherness, but amplify the intelligence in the soul toward the One. Urge yourself onward to the center of the clamorous light. Unlock the immortal depth of soul. Let your eyes fly up, up, up. The most robust of natures behold truth on their own account and are all the more the discoverers, being saved through their own strength. Weaker natures require tutelage from others, complete where they are not. To some, the God has provided instruction so that the mark of the light might be recognized. Others, he has fructified in their slumber by their own strength. How do the angels elevate the soul? By irradiating soul with fire, casting light upon it from everywhere, making it full of undefiled fire, imparting to it uninclining order and capacity not to scatter to matter's disorder, but make contact with the light of godlike things. Hecate says, these are the thoughts of the second father, after which my fire spirals. Those who release the soul on the breath are free. Oh, there's still more time. For God things are not accessible to bodily-minded mortals, but are accessible to such as, naked, hasten up, up, up. When you see the shapeless sacrificial fire shining, leaping, down through the depths of the whole cosmos, listen to the voice of the fire. Hecate says, invoke me often, and you'll see that everything is lions. For neither does the arched mass of the sky appear, nor do the stars shine. The light of the moon is occluded. The earth has no fixed place. All things are seen in lightning flashes. Having intoned these things, you will see a fire like a child leaping, extended on the billowing air, or a fire on which no form has been impressed, and from it a voice sent out, or a rich light rushing in spirals about a field, or perhaps you'll see a horse more glittering than starlight, or a child mounted on the fast back of a horse, or a fiery child ornamented with gold, or again a naked one on the back of a horse, standing, shooting a bow. Unique, beyond, not cut into small pieces, but of one form, indivisible. Nor will you leave the detritus of matter back on a beetling crag, but that there be a portion for an image at a place surrounded by light. Avengers, person-stranglers, Apollo exulting in harmony of light. I, the divine, have arrived, armed to the teeth. Zeus in the sky. In the midmost regions, the concourse of air. Then another, the third, heats up earth. These three furious princes are served by all things. They are originaries because they're the first to give rise to the flow of their own streams. Therefore, their cosmic level is celebrated as primordial fountain. Maybe I stop at this and we talk a little.
Yeah, all right. I can come over there if I get a little bit closer.
Yeah.
I was thinking of hearing you read the from the translations, we know of mythopoetics, but that's certainly not, you know, necessarily connected exactly to mythology per se. But then you have all the philosophies in there. So mytho-philosopho-poetics. How do you see this, say, within a larger framework? I mean, besides just translation of...
it's a funny question because I'm trying to not exactly figure that out, but figure out what kind of writing about that I want to actually do beyond what I've done. Because really my book about Hermes is a whole, it has an implied whole really pagan theology. That's really what it is. It's an attempt to say that the deities that actually appear to us, not when we're simply worshiping classical poetry or classical philosophy or the Western tradition or any of that, but there's an aspect in the poetic tradition that actually touches that which is outside of that Western hierarchy. And I'm interested in the seven texts that I translate are all texts which are sort of on that kind of edge, on that kind of a borderline between the very introduction of the system that is the Western system. And I simply take that the Hesiod poem, which is the story of the origins of the gods, is actually the story of how all the other gods outside of the Greek system, or all of the many different systems of mythology that exist within the different cities, Well, the Theogony poem is about how each of those gods came to become part of the Olympian system. So you have a story about Hermes, and you have stories about Leto, and you have stories about all of the different gods who live somewhere off in the wilderness in the beginning of the situation. And the Theogony tells how they become part of the gods, and they're connected to these hymns called the Homeric hymns, which are again stories about how the gods that were sort of wild gods in a pre-Greek universe become conquered, really, by the Olympians. And so the story of the Theogony, which is the story of how it comes into being, the world of the Greeks, is also a story of something that's gone by, but which nonetheless has a power to affect us if we actually read the poetry. And so the gods come into their appearances in the very process of the survival of their texts. And my relationship to translation is not really as a scholar or a scholastic or a Hellenist or anything of the sort, but simply as if I were, by being in contact with the actual Greek language, I'm in touch with something that has a continuity with that which comes before it. And the Theogony poem is a poem which, particularly in the images of the Titans and the monster, the big monster that he fights at the end, that these are images that are written about positively by Hesiod. He writes in a kind of exaltation or excitement in describing these gods. Yeah. So like that.
That's great. Great, Chuck. And I think that explanation and introducing readers or listeners to that work is an excellent way to end the program. This has been Poet Radio, May 2024. Chuck Stein has been my guest. My name is Chris. I'll be back next month
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening next month, but something good, no doubt. I'm going to leave you with this. All right. Good night, everyone.